Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanant Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Do the scientists who have faith in God believe that it is possible to communicate with God? I'll read it again, it's a bit long. Do the scientists who have faith in God believe that it is possible to communicate with God? So, there's a sad aspect of our culture these days. Not new, but getting more so, which is our absolute dependence on what quote unquote science says as the truth. So I don't know whose question this is, but whoever's it is, I'm sure the question arose out of, well, if the scientists say you can communicate with God, it must be possible. I mean, that's the question, right? You have to first assume that they are scientists who believe in God, so that's the first part of the question. And then those who believe in God, do they think it's possible to communicate with God? The meaning of the question being, seems to me, if they do, then that means it's possible. And if they don't, that means it's not possible. And the questioner must be wondering where he or she wants to be on the do we believe it's possible to communicate with God spectrum based on whatever science. Now, here's the dilemma with that. Those of you who have been coming to satsang for a while or watching it online for a while, you know that I have a background in science. You know that I love science. And yet, the dilemma with science is that science is only as good as its tools are. Science relies on tools for giving it truth. So whether it's a microscope or a telescope, a scale, a measure, something that measures something, something that sees something, this is what science depends upon. Scientific truths don't come out of scientists sitting around and saying what's true. They're bringing in evidence, right? Evidence, data, proof. Okay, great. So what counts as evidence? It has to be something that their tools can show us. Which means it has to be something that can be weighed on a scale or could fit in a beaker or can be seen with a microscope or a telescope. And for all of the things that are, science is great. the dilemma comes in all the things that you can't see with a microscope or telescope, the things that you can't stick on a slide to put in the microscope, the things that don't have a volume or an area, a length or a width, the things that you cannot easily determine whether it's a wave or a particle. Science doesn't have tools that deal with other things. And that's okay. We're not here to fault science. The dilemma comes when science tries to claim jurisdiction over things that its tools can't interact with. Because what that does then is deprive us of all of that, which is out of the realm of science. Things without a mass, without a volume, without a weight. Things invisible by either the naked eye or even your electron microscope. And that pertains, by the way, not only to God. When we start talking about it spiritually, sometimes it's hard for people. But it pertains to my favorite subject of love. Right? Get a scientist to prove to you that he or she loves his or her mother. Or husband or wife or child or anyone whom they say, yes, absolutely, I love them. You can't prove it by science. What's it weigh? What's it taste like? What's it sound like? What's it look like? Doesn't have a taste. Doesn't fall within any spectrum of light wave. But we know it exists. And so, communication with God exists. The tools of science don't prove it, but the tools of inner science, inner experience prove it. And whether it's the sages and the saints and the rishis, or whether it's the vast majority actually of people on earth, most people, if they can get beyond their ego indoctrinated mind that says, oh, you're crazy, that didn't really happen, you're making that up. Most people actually have had an experience in their life through sight, through sound, through intuition of communicating with the divine. And that doesn't mean that Lord Krishna in his divine blueness shows up with a flute on your doorstep. It could mean a formless presence. And if we haven't, don't worry. It'll happen. Not because science says it's possible, but because your heart opens to it. And if you still feel like you need science to first tell you it's possible and then you'll open your heart, ask yourself this. Is the earth round or flat? Okay, let's take a vote here, okay? All those in favor of earth is round, raise your hand. Great, unanimous. Anybody in favor of Earth is flat? Okay, one. So if we were in a science class today and we all wrote Earth is round, we'd get the answer right. If you go on Google and you type in what shape is the Earth, it's round. Okay, it may not be an exact perfect circle, but it's round. Another question. Does the sun revolve around the earth or the earth revolves around the sun? Okay, those in favor of sun revolving around the earth, raise your hand. One. Good. It's nice for a little bit of variety anyway. Those in favor of Earth rotating around the sun, raise your hand. Great. Now, two examples. How do you know that? Because we've learned it. In some science class somewhere, we learned the Earth is round. It and all the other planets in our solar system revolve around the sun. Well, a couple hundred years ago, a scientist was almost killed for suggesting that. If you had so much as suggested that the Earth wasn't the center of the universe, this was blasphemy. Galileo was literally almost killed. And we thought the Earth was flat. Why? Because that's what our instruments told us. Our telescopes were not yet good enough to give us the information that we now have that tells us, oh, the Earth is round and it revolves around the sun. Great. But who knows whether 200 years from now there aren't going to be people sitting around laughing that 200 years ago we thought the Earth was round and that we revolved around the sun. That's all based on our tools. The truth of science is based only on its tools. Now, who knows? Maybe science will advance and we'll get tools that will show us the presence of God. But for us to deprive ourselves of that truth just because the tools of science have not yet gotten there, not a good plan. Because we're the ones who get deprived. Who knows how old we'll be or whether we'll already be onto another body by the time science has a tool showing us you can communicate with God. Yes, God exists. We already know it doesn't have a tool to show us love. And we already know the, not just presence, but the essential nature of love. And so don't worry about what the scientists say. Find your own truth. Go within. Be a tool rather than depending on the tools of science. Be a tool. Be a tool to channel the presence of God, the voice of God, the sight of God. Speak to God. Be that microphone to speak to God. You don't need science to finally develop a tool to tell you it's okay. You have the only tool you need, which is yourself and your love. So use that. Science will get there eventually. But why wait? Why lose even another moment?
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org. That's rain.org.
Brought to you by Rain and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. You stay consistent in your highest, purest form by continuing to remind yourself what that is. That highest, purest form is the truth of who you are. When you lose that connection is when you lose the purity. And so develop techniques and ways. It's like when you meditate, right? The goal of meditation, or the goal of the techniques that we practice, rather, is to keep bringing our mind back, whatever we are practicing upon, the breath, a mantra, a candle flame, a word, a sound, to keep bringing it back to that, so that ultimately, eventually, we may actually have that experience of meditation. But that practice is a practice that stays with us in life as well. So in the same way that the mind wanders and then you bring it back, and it wanders and you bring it back, you're in Delhi, the mind, but you bring it back. Next thing you're in New York in the mind, but you bring it back. Next thing the mind is in Paris, you bring it back. Next thing the mind is in your childhood, you bring it back. Next thing the mind is in your future, you bring it back. You just keep bringing it back. In the same way as you move through the world, you know that purity of the truth of who I am. Stay conscious. Stay aware. Stay mindful. And as much as you can, develop just techniques of remembering. So an easy one, for example, every time before you eat or drink anything. Every time before you eat or drink, take a moment, go within. Thank the divine, of course, and connect. It's a technique. We eat and drink all day long. Otherwise, we forget God, but you give a technique like that. Whenever you're going to take something, just connect before that. Set an alarm on your phone to just click every half hour. Every time it does, maybe just a light. Every time that light goes, oh yeah, check in. Where are you? Are you in your highest, purest, truest self? Or have you gotten pulled out into something? Slowly, 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 it'll become much more natural to stay in that groove, and you won't need all of the different reminders. Like as we practice meditation for a long time, eventually you get better at holding the mind in one place. But so do whatever you need to do, because we have to move through the world. It's not about living in a cave. It's about living in the world. Different sort of jungle. And so just develop techniques. If you've got a friend, someone who you're close to, share with that person. Have sort of daily check-ins. How was today? And every morning, reconnect and recommit. And every evening, check in. You know, Pooja Swamiji always says at the end of the day, check your balance sheet. How many times did I really come from that purest place, and how many times did I not? And then don't feel bad. Neither feel proud nor embarrassed. Either way, give it all to God. Go to sleep. Get up the next day, pray for the strength to stay anchored again. And that's how our lives become meditation. So just keep bringing it back. Bring it back to the purity, back to the purity, back to the purity. And the last piece with this is, have courage. Because your dilemma is not only the wandering mind, but your dilemma is going to be the world trying to pull you and say, oh, you can't get ahead like that. Everybody lies, everybody steals, everybody cheats. You'll fail, you'll lose everything. So you'll actually end up with people trying to tell you. Itni si dihona nahi chahiye. Thoda sa to karna to padta hai. And this is where you need to have the courage to say no. Mujhe nahi karna. Even if it means I don't become the CEO of the company, or even if it means that my company doesn't necessarily become Fortune 500, it's worth it. Because I've won the real lottery. If at the end of the day I can go to sleep without a sleeping pill or a couple of shots of something, you've won the life lottery. You've won something and earned something much, much more valuable than what you get by losing yourself to get ahead.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. I have so many thoughts in my mind regarding my future. Because of this, I have pain in my head. How can I get relief? It's a very interesting and tragic irony that the overwhelming majority of time in our minds we spend in either the past or the future. The overwhelming majority of thoughts, for most of us, it could even be close to 100%, almost 100% for almost everybody, is all in the past or the future. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean 50 years ago. It may only be an hour ago. It may only be, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. oh my God, I can't believe he did that or she did that. I can't believe this or that. Or it may be only an hour in the future. Oh, I wonder what's for dinner. Oh, I hope I don't get stuck in traffic on the way home. But for most of us, it's a little bit more than that. There's the past that we tend to either romanticize, that, oh, the good old days. Oh, everything was so wonderful when. Or it's looking back with pain and grudges, holding on. And in the future, similarly, there's that anxiety. And even if we're looking at the future with excitement, it's still keeping us out of the present moment. And the message still is, the present moment isn't good enough. Oh, tomorrow will be really great. Well, whether it will be really great or not, I don't know. But by having my mind focused like that, one thing is for sure, which is my present moment isn't really great. Because I'm not even here. So no matter what my present moment may be made up of, maybe it has all of the essential ingredients of greatness. But if I'm not there, because I'm in tomorrow, there's no experience of greatness now. So the tragic irony is we spend almost all of our time in the place, either the past or the future, in which that which we really want, joy, peace, meaning, love, awakening, cannot exist. All of that which is really meaningful, you can only have it in the present moment. You cannot be happy tomorrow. Or peaceful tomorrow. You can only be happy right now. You can only experience peace right now. Yeah, if I experience it now, chances are I'll bring it into the next moment, and the next moment, and the next moment. And at some point, right now, will become tomorrow. Or rather, tomorrow will be right now. But I only can experience what I'm looking for right now. And so all of the longing for, fear of the past, the future, keeps me out of the present. And so the anxiety about the future is ensuring that I'm not in peace now. Is it going to make my future better? Probably not. Because the same anxiety I carry in the moment is the anxiety I'm going to carry into tomorrow. And this is the dilemma. And so, yeah. You're going to develop pain in your head. And you're going to develop an inability to actually experience that which you want. And this is where all of the spiritual traditions have teachings of mindfulness. Of presence, of awareness, of consciousness, of be here nowness. Because right here, right now, is the only chance I've got. And so if you find that your mind is going into tomorrow or going into yesterday or 10 years from now or 10 years ago, just bring it back. This is the practice of meditation, but meditation is not supposed to only be that which I do when I sit on my cushion and my eyes are closed. Meditation is that which I do when I stand up. That which happens on my cushion prepares me, readies me, trains me, habituates me to be able to carry that meditation into the world. And so when you're meditating and the mind wanders, there's two different ways to respond to it. Way number one, you jump onto where it goes and you follow that thought until how knows how many minutes later or hours later, you realize, oh wait, I was supposed to be meditating. And it's amazing. It begins so harmlessly. Maybe you're meditating and suddenly from the bakery across the street, you smell blueberry muffins. And suddenly the mind goes, ah, blueberry muffins. And then it says, oh, that's what I should have for breakfast today, a blueberry muffin. And it says, no, but I was supposed to start a diet last week, no muffins. And then it says, I don't know how I got these fat genes. Anything I eat, it goes straight to my hips. You know, I wish I had had my mom's physique instead of my dad's physique. And God, you know, my brother, he can eat anything he wants. And I remember that time we were 10 and he put away a whole pizza and then an hour later he was hungry again. So you see what happens, right? One whiff of a scent coming in through the window. And where am I? 10 years old eating pizza with my brother. Bemoaning the size of my hips, right? But the other option is you're meditating and the smell of blueberry muffin comes in and one part of the mind goes, ah, blueberry muffins. And then you say, ah, the breath. Back to the breath or back to the mantra. And that's what meditation is about. It's not that the mind doesn't wander. It's that you bring it right back, right back. The way that it's easy to imagine this and think about it is if you're lying on your back looking up at the beautiful blue sky, and say it's a slightly windy day, and some clouds are blowing across the sky. Well, when a cloud comes, say a cloud starts in this part of the sky, you've got two options of how to deal with those clouds. Option one is you look at it and you say, ah, cloud. And you follow it all the way across the sky. You watch the cloud and watch the cloud and you wonder, oh, what type of cloud it is. And yeah, we studied that in sixth grade, but I don't remember. And oh, you're with the cloud. The other way is you stay focused on the blue sky. What's happening over there, you're not worried about it. And when that cloud comes right in front of you, you just allow it to pass. And you return your gaze immediately to the blueness of the sky. And this is what meditation is. Those clouds are the thoughts. And the blueness of the sky is the space between the thoughts, consciousness, awareness. It's not about hooking yourself into every distraction or every thought or every smell or every memory. It's about keeping on that space between them, keeping on the breath, keeping on the mantra. And yeah, they'll pass. And what you find slowly, slowly is the less attention you pay to them, the less frequently they come. And so when those thoughts come of the future, what's going to happen to me? The other thing some of us do, a lot of us do, is a thought comes while we're meditating, or a fear or a desire, and we say, oh God, I hate this. I can't even meditate properly. Look at that. 10 minutes a day I allocate to meditation. I can't even do that. I'm besieged with fears. I'm useless. I'm hopeless. I'll never get this right. That's just another distraction. It's just another thought. And so when you have any of those thoughts, any of those feelings, any of those fluctuations of the stuff of the mind, because that's all it is, the chemistry, the electricity of the brain, it's just a fluctuation. Different chemical reaction, different electrical pattern. That's all these thoughts are. So as we have fluctuations of the stuff of the mind, we just keep drawing the awareness back to that which is still. And so the same thing happens in life then. When suddenly you're besieged with a fear, instead of allowing yourself to hook your awareness into it and follow it and run with it, and then what, and then what, and then what, and then what? Right? We were talking about fear last night. Every one of them ends in, and then I die. Whether I die of embarrassment or I physically die, if you take whatever you fear to its end result, it's, and then I die. So when we know where the story ends, why bother going there? How many times have you seen that movie? How many times have your worst fears played out on the screen of your mind? You've seen it all. It's like reruns of really bad shows that you didn't even enjoy the first time around. Why watch them again? You know exactly where it's going. Misery. So you just bring it back. Another fear, you bring it back. But there's also specific actions we can take. If you've got a very specific concern about the future, well, the future is being created today. When we speak about predestiny, is something predestined? Well, sure, but right now is the pre that is determining later tonight, determining tomorrow, determining next month, next year. So right now, what you are thinking, doing, is laying the groundwork for where you're going to be a month from now, a year from now. And so if you've got a serious concern, take care of it. Right? Squirrels that are smart enough to be concerned about what they're going to eat in the winter are the ones who collect the nuts in the summertime. And they bury them. Somehow God's given them this brilliant ability to remember where they buried them. Birds that are concerned about where they're going to lay their eggs, they build nests. So not being worried doesn't mean I don't take care. Doesn't mean I don't plan. Pooja Swamiji always says, failing to plan is planning to fail. So if there's a specific concern that you have, plan for it. But if what you've got is this just general, consistent, kind of low-grade or high-grade anxiety that doesn't serve you and that isn't possible to be planned for because it takes every form. It's not limited to being worried about what just one thing. It's worried about the future in general. Just bring the awareness back. Bring it back. Bring it back. Bring it back. And spend as much time as you can in nature. Because in nature, what you see is how exquisitely the universe takes care of the creation. There's this beautiful story of a king who's a very good king, a little arrogant, but he's a good guy. And he builds all sorts of schools and hospitals and homes and whatnot for his subjects. And one day this holy man comes to the kingdom and the king is walking him through the kingdom. And he's showing the holy man, oh, and this is where I provided for the sick people, and this is where I provided for the homeless, and this is where I provided for the children. Holy man's listening. They walk by a river, and the holy man bends down and he picks up this rock. And he says to the king, tell your men to break this rock. So the king's like, break a rock? All right, holy man's telling him to do it. He tells his bodyguards, soldiers, break this rock. They break it, and inside the rock is this beautiful, nutrient-rich pool of water. And inside that pool of water is this little frog, living very happily in this pool of water. And the holy man says to the king, did you provide this for the frog also? And I love that story because we get into this arrogant sense of somehow it's up to us. I'm the one providing, I'm the one doing, or who's going to provide for me, who's going to do for me? Without realizing, there is this just exquisite and perfect provider, a capital P provider, who creates pools of water in rocks, who teaches chipmunks and squirrels how to save nuts for the winter time, who teaches caterpillars how to weave cocoons and become butterflies, teaches birds how to build nests. And to realize that we have that same intelligence, that same grace, and to have faith, and to do the work. The bird has to build the nest, the caterpillar has to weave the cocoon, the squirrel has to actually collect the nuts. So it's this beautiful balance between faith in the divine intelligence of the universe, in the divine provider of the universe, and the action. Putting that intelligence into action to actually plan. And at the overlap of those two, is where that anxiety should disappear.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org. That's rainn.org.
Brought to you by Rain and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. So sadly, we've all been indoctrinated into the school that says, I have five ways of knowing the universe. My sight, my smell, my touch, my taste, my hearing. Those are the five ways that I know the universe. That's what we've all been taught. So those are what makes the universe evident to me. How do you know it? Somebody says to you, prove it, whatever it may be. Well, you've got to prove it. It better either be visible or audible or smellable or tasteable or tangible. Science tells us the same thing. It better fit in my beaker, or be weighable on my scale, or be measured by my tape measure, or be seeable in my telescope or my microscope, then it exists. But of course, that isn't true. And we all know that. But because we've been so schooled to believe that, every other way of knowing has gotten lumped into what we call intuition. So intuition has become sort of the umbrella for the sixth sense. But there's not just one additional way of knowing. There's so many ways of knowing. Sometimes that intuition comes to us audibly. Sometimes it comes to us energetically. Sometimes we actually see something. There's so many ways that intuition comes to us. So we've got a lot of other ways of knowing the world, but because science isn't studying them, we haven't yet been given in our educational system names for them, ways of understanding them, ways of heightening them. It's a great tragedy. You get all kinds of testing for your eyes and your ears. You know, you're given all kinds of health tips, keep your eyes healthy, keep your ears healthy. How many of us get tips on keeping our intuition healthy, keeping that intuition flowing? None of us in school or in regular science. You've got to come into a spiritual world. And even then, in most cases, it's very, very vague. This is what I hope the next wave of science will be. Because, of course, you take something, for example, like love. Now, love exists. We all know it exists. But it defies everything that science tells us. You cannot see it, hear it, taste it, touch it. You cannot prove to anyone that it exists. If you say to me, I love you, and I say, prove it, you can't. If I require you to use those five ways. Now, if I'm open to an umbrella sixth way, you could prove it to me just by looking in my eyes. And I would know, ah, yeah, you love me. But if I'm shut to that way of knowing, and you are relegated to the tools of science to prove to me that you love me, you will fail. Or to even prove to me that love exists, that you love anyone, that you have ever felt love or known love. So tragically, the most beautiful and important aspects in our life are those that we spend our lives wondering, does this really exist? How do I know? So I really am hoping that a new wave of science will come in and teach us as children. How do we keep those channels open? But in the meantime, when you ask about intuition, of course it exists. It's energy. All of the senses are energy. We see because of light energy. We hear because of sound energy. It's all frequency. Light waves, sound waves. That's how it works. It's all energy. And so intuition is just another form of energy. It's a different way of knowing. But trust it. And the more you trust it, the more heightened it gets. But because it's very intangible and vague, you just want to make sure that it doesn't get mixed up with judgment. That you don't develop the, I crossed the street because the person on the other side was of a different color than me, and therefore my intuition said he was dangerous and I should cross. So what that is, of course, is cultural stereotypes, discrimination, judgment. But we've all taken it in so deeply that you could feel it as intuition. You could be walking down a street and seeing people of a certain race or of a certain color. And because of what we've been indoctrinated to believe, you could feel something that you think is this beautiful intuition that says cross the street, when really all it is indoctrination. So be careful. And I'm not saying don't cross the street, but don't convince yourself that that was because you had a very deep spiritual intuition that there was something wrong with these people. Don't allow that sense to be co-opted into separation. As you talked about somebody's nice or not nice, don't let your intuition get co-opted into separation. Nice person, yucky person. Don't waste it. Allow your intuition to guide you toward deeper ways of knowing. Deeper ways of connecting. And yeah, we do feel it with people. You feel the energy of a person. This is a person with whom our frequency, it works. And we all know this. There are certain people in whose presence you just want to keep staying. And then there are other people in whose presence you can't help thinking, I wonder how soon I can go, or I wonder how soon they're going to go. And that's okay. It's energetic intuition. So yeah, we all have that. But the intuition is able to guide us much deeper than just, I like this person, I don't like this person. It's able to give us a completely different way of knowing. And so it's a sense, or rather senses, to be heightened. Spiritual senses, the real ways of knowing. Because all of that which is really valuable sadly doesn't fit in a beaker, can't be seen in a microscope. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.